the leaders that I've seen that are successful right now, they're purposely making the transition to a more culture forward perspective. And I applaud them when I see this, because especially for people our age, the role models were awful.
Welcome to The Path Uncut. I'm Greg Ng, and this is the show where we spotlight bold leaders and forward thinkers, trailblazers who are creating meaningful change in their organizations. Each episode, we dive deep into the experiences, methodologies, and impact of some of today's most inspiring changemakers. It's a chance to explore their stories, learn from their successes and challenges, and gain valuable insights to help you drive change in your own world. Today, I'm joined by Bob Batchelor. Bob is a critically acclaimed cultural historian, biographer, and the Vice President of Global Marketing and Communications at Workplace Options, a Raleigh-based company that provides holistic well-being services to over 115,000 clients and 83 million members worldwide. Bob has spent his career examining modern culture, from comic books and music to literary figures and history's most fascinating outlaws. But beyond his work as an author and historian, he's also deeply engaged in the corporate world, helping organizations foster environments where employees feel psychologically safe, valued, and empowered to bring their full selves to work. All right, Bob Batchelor, great to have you on the show. For the listeners out there, why don't you spend a couple beats explaining your role at Workplace Options, what you do, and then I want to spend some time specifically talking about something that I care very passionately about, and I know that you do too, which is the idea of psychological safety.
Yeah, Greg, I'm really looking forward to digging into that, and I'm happy to be here. So I have kind of a day life by day and by night. Mm-hmm. So by day, I'm the Vice President of Global Marketing and Communications at Workplace Options. Mm-hmm. Workplace Options is probably the most famous company that you've never heard of in America, because in the United States, we white label our services. Mm-hmm. So we are a traditional employee assistance program, EAP, but really we're a well-being company because we go beyond the traditional EAP services. The rest of the world, we're known as WPO or Workplace Options. So we have about 113,000 clients and 88 million lives under care. Mm. So it's a giant global operation. Mm. And I like to think that because we focus on mental health, that I know pretty much that somewhere in the world every day, somebody's really on the edge and they're getting better or getting to health faster by using WPO services.
Excellent.
So we are a company of do-gooders. By night, I am a cultural historian and biographer, and I'm probably best known for the series of Stan Lee biographies I've written. I wrote a true crime book called The Bourbon King that's very popular, and I've written about other characters from Bob Dylan and John Updike to a recent book on The Doors and the kind of the death of the 60s. Mm. So that's what I do in my free time.
Yeah.
So I have this day, night kind of thing going on.
All that free time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I imagine with anyone who wears multiple hats, in my case, I'm a CEO by day and I'm a soccer photographer at night, and shifting those gears is actually quite not only relaxing, but necessary mm-hmm. for me to be at the sharp and at the top of my game during the day is to have this outlet at night. And I imagine that's the same for you.
It is. It is. I almost vehemently need to read before I go to bed mm-hmm. to clear my mind. My wife, Suzette, and I, she's an antique and vintage dealer. Wow. So we go treasure hunting a lot, and I'm good at shutting the battery off, and it recharges in that process because it's highly brain heavy work that I'm doing in these two roles. But it's a natural outcropping of my intellectual curiosity. It's what drives me. And so far, so good.
Excellent. Well, I love that. So thank you for the background on WPO. I'm curious as to what is mental health obviously is such a very important, well, I say obviously, but you know, based on a lot of behavior from a lot of organizations, the actions actually in some cases contradict that. But I believe that mental health is such an important thing that leaders need to factor in, take care of, be mindful of, and actually put structure in place to ensure that their teammates are healthy. We, I think, take for granted the physical health part of our compensation, if you will, or benefits package. But the mental health component is such an important thing. I'd like to start there. What are you seeing in terms of organizations and how they are prioritizing mental health? How are they, are there differences? Are there differences country to country, region to region in the world or by category? What types of trends are you seeing?
Oh, that's a great question because it's always changing. It's very transformational moment by moment. I should mention that I also came to WPO by the acquisition of the diversity movement. So I've been working for the last 5 years in DEI and consulting and these kind of issues. So I'm not a clinician. I would say that I am an expert in company culture and how you create company culture. So I'm not a clinician. I'm not a psychiatrist or anything like that, like some of my teammates. So what we're seeing is that a lot of organizations are trying really hard, but it's difficult to get to their employees because of all the noise in the world. Mm. So even the most good-natured and do-gooder companies are having a hard time cutting through the clutter. And so they have to work extra hard. Not only do they need to turn to their resources like their EAPs and other things like that, but they're also having to cut through another layer of noise just because the world is in such chaos all over the world. We did a white paper recently. Oliver Brecht, one of our VPs who is a psychiatrist, he wrote about political transitions all over the world. You know, clearly in the United States, this has been difficult for many people.
Yeah.
But it's the same way all over the world. When you start digging into the numbers, it's something maybe 30% of the world's governments changed hands in the just in 2024, something like that. So people are really struggling. Leaders are struggling to find answers. There is a large movement to go beyond the traditional check the box kind of, you know, HR driven training. Mm-hmm. There are so many people out there that want to do the right thing, and they're still looking for guidance. And I say still, like you just said earlier, to me it seems so obvious that it should be universal.
Right.
But I forget that, you know, using a baseball analogy, we're in the first inning.
Yes.
In terms of mental health. We're not in the bottom of the seventh, like I think those of us who really care feel sometimes.
Right.
That there's no hope because we're so deep in it, but companies are still struggling and people are still struggling. Mm-hmm. So I think leaders are looking for answers.
Yeah. And I know as a leader myself, it's there tends to be, unfortunately, a huge gap between what I wish to do and what I'm able to do. And in some cases, that's financially driven. In some cases, that's the size of the organization. In some cases, there are certain things that require a fundamental culture shift for an organization to support from top down or from bottom up. And that's hard. It's hard when it's in addition to the work that the organization is doing for their customers or their clients or their partners. So let's take a step back and actually define. I'd like to understand from your perspective or WPO's perspective, how do you define the idea of psychological safety?
I think psychological safety, when you look at it, it's essentially having the safety to express an opinion at work, and an opinion that may be against the grain, without retribution. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most basic. When I look at it, I think about a culture of trust. So when you build a culture that's based on trust, psychological safety is one of the factors, but the trust is the really important factor. And so that's how I think about it. It's, there are plenty of definitions out there that, you know, really long and deep, but I think it's essentially safety to speak up.
Yeah.
Without retribution.
Without retribution.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had a great example of this happen to me yesterday. One of the things that is a challenge of being a CEO is you rarely get feedback. Yeah. I think that's part of one of the things that is almost the scary thing when you see things like Glassdoor or something like mm-hmm. that. You see feedback only then, right? You see
only the bad.
Only the bad, right? Because let's face it, rarely are people motivated to go out of their way to say the good. But I was given a gift yesterday, and not only was it a gift because of the content, but it was a gift because it reinforced that hopefully we at our organization are doing the right things to create a psychologically safe environment. I had members of my team bring up deliberately with me in a private setting that there was misalignment and confusion over some of the things that I have said in terms of what expectations are or direction. Mm. And at first, always those things sting. But it was a tremendous gift for me, not only to know those answers so that we could address real issues, but wow, it sure did make me feel good that they felt comfortable actually telling me. Mm-hmm. To me, that is also a great example of an environment that, at least anecdotally, it feels like maybe there is some safety. But how does one ensure that everyone within that organization feels that way? It's one thing if my direct reports, who are also VPs, right, mm-hmm. have the confidence and empowerment to bring those up to me. How do I ensure that every person within my organization feels that?
Yeah, it is a gift that your team feels comfortable enough with you to speak like openly and frankly. I used to think that you could just role model behaviors mm-hmm. and that people would pick up on it. And before I jumped back into the corporate world, I was a professor for 16 years. I taught, and I used to think all the time early in my teaching career that if I just role model, the students will pick it up, particularly around critical thinking. Mm. I thought, if I just start asking critical thinking based questions, they'll start. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
And what I've realized being in the corporate world, back in the corporate world, is that you have to just message and message and message. Mm-hmm. So for my team, which is a couple dozen people around the world, I tell them, this is a safe space. I am an inclusive leader, and I fervently believe in being an inclusive leader. And probably the number one tenet of being an inclusive leader is that you're not perfect. Yeah. You have to accept and be self-aware enough that you're going to make mistakes. There are certain things ingrained in people based on their generation, where they were raised, their family beliefs, their religious beliefs, that are going to compete and contrast with others. So as an inclusive leader, I know that I'm going to make mistakes, but I want my team to be open and bring me, you know, what's really on their minds. Mm-hmm. And I think as you go throughout an organization, the leaders have to speak about this way more than they think they do. Mm. And it's like on social media, and it's like messaging. People's mental map is that if you say something that everybody's listening and everybody's paying attention and that they're seeing that message over and over and over again. But it's really like being on a road you've rarely been on and seeing a billboard.
Yeah.
Who's on that road in that moment?
Right.
Because you can look at somebody with 50,000 followers on LinkedIn or 100,000 followers on Instagram. They'll have posts that both 300 people see mm-hmm. and potentially 1 million people will see. Mm-hmm. they're not all the same people because the algorithm sends people off on crazy directions. So it's like that with internal communications. Mm. Leaders think, well, I just talked about that last week in a town hall. It's not enough.
Right.
It's got to be repetitive. What I like to think as well, and I do believe this, most leaders, especially in the C-suite, are successful, highly successful.
Sure.
They're self-motivated. You don't have to push them to learn new things. They're different levels of competitive, but somewhat competitive, I would say, in general. In that self-awareness of repeating the message to your people at all levels, you're then going to be thinking about that message yourself in your quiet moments, in your self-aware times, in your lifelong learning moments. And it's going to help you because there aren't classes on this.
Right.
And so the confluence of contextual factors is immense. And so I think one of my colleagues a week or so ago, joking with me, said, you know, you're the CEO whisperer. And I laughed about that. I don't know if it's necessarily true, but I have a long history of working with like I'm their behind the scenes person.
Yeah.
And often their ghostwriter. When you ghostwrite for somebody, you're literally inside their head.
Right.
And over time, you begin to predict and understand how they think, what they're going to say.
Right.
So if I could give a blanket statement to the CEOs and the future CEOs out there listening, it's that your message is not going to land once. You could give the best speech in the world.
Right.
It could be shown a million times on YouTube. There are still 314 million other Americans, for example, that have not heard or seen or don't know you. Mm-hmm. So that messaging of psychological safety, it has to not only be role modeled, role modeling is still important, but it's got to be repeated.
Right.
It's a noisy world. I mean, think about how much Coke has spent on advertising in the last 100 years. And there's still some 13-year-old out there who's going to try a Coke for the first time right now.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the kind of the internal messaging hat that I put on.
You know, I was just I'm a big baseball fan. I was just having this conversation with someone that I took to a game just last season, where with that example of Coke, is that every single stadium that I've ever attended in my entire life, professional sports, has a sponsorship by Coke. Mm-hmm. And the person I was with, not in the marketing field, on a completely different industry, and said, why is that worth money to keep on spending? I know what Coke is. Everyone knows what Coke is. Mm-hmm. And that is a great example. Yes, but a young kid maybe doesn't know that, or someone who just isn't exposed to that world. Or maybe it's just a very great reminder that how it feels and how it tastes and